Got Your Ears On is brought to you by Tactical Legion Knives. Live from the campus of Top Radio, under the direction of Guido, Scoot, and Johnson, it's the pride of podcasting. It's Got Your Ears On.
All right, everybody, hello and welcome to this week's episode of Got Your Ears On. I'm Guido along with Scoot.
Yep.
And Johnson.
Baseball's kind of back, Guido.
Baseball's back. We'll be talking about that a little bit later in the show. But I guess, you know, we're going to start off with WVU news. We've got a lot to cover today, guys. And the first thing I want to say to start off the show is that we record the show, just so people know, to be completely an open book with everybody that listens. We record the show Monday evenings, and then we release it on Tuesdays. And I feel like I need to say that just because everything is changing so much so quickly in the world.
Right. So are you saying that in hopes that the people that are going to make these strange choices and different decisions will do them in a timely manner that fits our show?
Yes.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Everybody should
preferably
be
before Monday night.
Let's do it Monday afternoon at the latest. We'll say 4 o'clock would be the cutoff.
Right. By five. I'll give you the five.
Monday after lunch. That'd be great.
You know, if you're a player and you're going to tweet out something, just do it on Monday afternoons.
Or if you're a member of the administration, you're thinking big changes or reorgs or something, how about just Monday afternoon? Seems like a good time.
Johnson, did you spend time in the corporate world with the terminology reorgs?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That is definitely a corporate world term.
You've never been in the midst of a reorg? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm a man of the people, and the people, we don't use those terms.
Oh, okay.
So speaking of reorgs, Coach Vic, he's gone.
He gone.
Not, I honestly, and I said this, I think after the news broke and I tweeted, or you tweeted, we saw the tweet that Kerry Martin Jr. sent. I think I texted both of you guys, and I was like, yep, he's gone. Like, there was not a chance Coach Vic was going to be able to survive this.
Well, I think the die had pretty much been cast once all that came through. I would tend to agree. And I think Scoot and I were talking earlier this week. I don't know. I know that we're supposed to be all fired up because this is kind of like phase two of this issue, Guido. But I think really, my opinion hasn't changed a whole lot since we talked about it, you know, at the end of June. I think we've been taking, Scoot, we talked about this. We've been taking, whether you want to call it workplace etiquette or sensitivity training or what have you, trainings for any company I've ever worked for or with for what, the last 15, 20 years.
Sure.
So people are well versed in what you do and don't talk about
with
your coworkers and colleagues. So if that's the kind of behavior that was really going on, then I don't think you can be shocked if that stuff gets called out.
I guess this was never really official, but what I had heard from a lot of people and writers and other podcasts about WVU sports is that this decision was made within days after the incident. The last 2 weeks was mostly just sorting out contractual issues with it. So obviously they come out and they say they've mutually agreed to separate in regular terms. Coach Vic was let go. They spent 2 weeks trying to sort out through lawyers how much he was going to get paid of his contract, which is the vast majority of what was left on it, about $600,000. And I have to tell you that, you know, West Virginia probably didn't take this decision lightly, considering the climate and everything going on economically in college athletics right now. $600,000 is going to be kind of hard for them to part with right now.
Yeah, sure.
But, I think the writing was on the wall when this all started.
And back to kind of what Johnson was talking about with going through trainings and sensitivity type stuff that employers will put you through or have you go through. In the education world, like, you're going to come across all different types of people all the time. And when you are put in charge of leading young people, like it or dislike it, you're signing up to basically be on stage all the time. So if you do something great, people are going to see it. If you do something stupid, people are going to see it. And unfortunately, when you are in the education business, it's younger people who are looking for examples to follow. And when they see somebody that's being paid to lead give a bad example of how to follow, it's not going to go over well once that becomes public.
Yeah, and let's not get it twisted. I mean, in my comment, I'm not just blowing it off. I mean, look, I hate it. It sucks, but that's a good point, Scoot. I totally agree. It's still, I'm just saying, kind of like you are, if that type of behavior is going on, then you can't be shocked if someone calls you out
100%.
On it, if someone takes you
right.
to task
right.
on it. You can't be shocked.
And you've got to be, and I don't know if it was because he was respected as a good guy or a nice guy. I don't know. I don't know Vic Koning from anyone. So as to why maybe his peers didn't step in and say, hey, don't say that, or I don't know if I'd be saying that, or watch what you're saying around this group of guys or whatever. But at the same time, you've got to realize that, you know, when I started coaching 16, 17 years ago,
you're old.
Yeah, I know. It's sad. But internet was the least of my worries. You know, I was more worried about, are we going to have a phone available to call people's parents when it's time to get them picked up? I wasn't worried about a kid tweeting out something that, you know, says coach was doing X, Y, and Z out in public. That was the least of my worries. If something ever got out, it's because of word of mouth, really.
Right.
Well, and let's realize that this has, and like you said, Scoot, this has put a whole new light on what it means to be a coach at one of these, at a Division I school like this, because it's a new world, folks. And when the name and likeness stuff hits in a year or two, that's going to be an even more new world. These players, these, you know, and we say kids, but these are adults, these are men that are playing football at a D1 level, now have the ability to tweet out something like what Kerry Martin Jr. tweeted out, and it can affect your job. So when you're in that room, when you're coaching them on the field,
it's
you've got to think
back,
about what you're
exactly
saying and what
right.
you're doing.
It's got to be in the back of your mind. You know, I don't want to necessarily offend anyone, but I've got to watch what I say, because it could be recorded, it could be tweeted out, it could be, I guess, I don't know that college kids are on blogs or anything, but, you know, who knows? It could be on a Snapchat or Instagram or something. So we just have to be mindful of that as professionals and as adults.
And once that kind of stuff comes out, regardless of where you fall on the sides of this issue, what is the university then expected to do? I mean, it puts them between a rock and a hard... It would be like if you saw a report come from WVUHR and it said something like, you know, I don't know, well, it's come to our attention that Dave in the guidance office, he likes to rub everybody's shoulders when he goes in their office. And by everybody, we mean all the ladies in accounting. But, you know, he's been in that role for like 18 years, so, and no one's really complained before, so we're cool. We're cool. We're cool. We're just going to go. Like, no. I mean, like, once that stuff's out there, then it puts... Because I know a lot of people were like, well, this really isn't fair. Well, no. Again, the whole thing sucks. But once that stuff's out there and they look into it and there's you know, grounds to think that behavior was going on, then it's like, well, what do you do? You know, you're kind of stuck.
Yeah, Johnson, you know, I think that the problem is that it's... You're in a place now in the world where everything's out on Twitter. Everybody, Scooty, can say whatever they want, and you saw it in the aftermath of Coach Vic getting fired.
Yeah, and there were two themes I noticed on Twitter this week, and apparently, Guido, I love you and I care about this show a lot, because I would have rather just uninstalled my Twitter app than followed WVU Twitter over the last week and a half, because... Guys, if you're out there and you're not following WVU Twitter, woo wee, is it fun? You need to get on there.
It was a rough week.
Because when you hit your Twitter app, it might as well just punch you straight in the face if you follow a lot of WVU
stuff.
So
one of my issues is this whole, we're going to blame everything on quote unquote the cancel culture.
Okay.
Which that terminology didn't exist 30 minutes ago, let alone four years ago. I mean... Am I upset the Dukes of Hazzard is not on television? I grew up with the Dukes of Hazzard. I like the Dukes of Hazzard.
I don't think that's the same cancel.
It was canceled. Am I upset that Live PD was canceled? Yeah, I like Live PD.
Oh, yeah, that's canceled. Right. Now, Live PD was canceled.
Yeah, Live canceled. PD was canceled. Yeah. Okay, if you want to talk about cancel culture, say that five times fast. That is hard to do. Cancel culture.
Cancel culture.
We can talk about television cancel culture. I don't like it when shows get canceled, especially ones that I really enjoy. But when it comes to looking to blame somewhere, like we're going to try to blame something, it can't possibly be the guy that said the insensitive comments that was wrong. It's got to be the person that called out the guy for saying the insensitive comments that's wrong. To me, that's crazy. Like, times have changed, and we've got to adapt with the times. And like I said before, if you're in the education business, you are paid to be a leader. You're not paid to, you know, say whatever you want, and nobody really needs the coach's opinion on race, the coach's opinion on religion. You know, there's some issues there, and I get it. You might say that 90% of the team is Christian. Well, that 10% matters too. And you can't just say, well, all these other guys are Christian. I can say whatever I want.
Well, you have to, I'm not saying I'm always good at this, but you're right, Scooch. You have to be able to decouple how you identify with the issue with just the issue itself. And I saw a lot of that on Twitter this last week and a half.
Absolutely.
It wasn't about how, you know, whether you think, Coach Vic's viewpoint is right or KJ's viewpoint is right. Really, that, you know, at the end of the day, that's irrelevant. It's just, what is the issue we're talking about? And I get it. Like, you react emotionally. That's what people are doing. But I think we have to be able to decouple those things and then say, okay, let's step back and let's look at it and then make a decision based on the issue. And I actually bookmarked a tweet, you guys, really quick. I'm going to pull it back out because one of them, and you're going to wait on me to find it, because if I had to follow all this crap, then you're going to hear about it.
While you're looking, let me say one last point. I don't have anything. I don't know the guy. He could be the greatest guy ever. He might be my favorite person in the world if I ever got to meet him. However, I'm going to be 100% real with everybody, you guys, with anyone that listens to this podcast. Raise your hand. You can't see it on a podcast. Raise your hand if you knew who Vic Koning, Vic Koning. Raise your hand if you knew who Vic Koning was 3 years ago.
Yeah, prior to last season, prior to last whatever, January.
So to say that Neil Brown made the biggest mistake of all by, you know, mutually parting ways with a guy that we didn't know existed 2 years ago, and... yeah, well, he did some nice things with the defense, but they weren't the best defense in the country. And to act like we can't possibly find somebody to step in his shoes. One thing you'll learn in the education business, a lot of times it's not the coaches, it's the programs themselves, right? So
right.
Everyone's replaceable. Everyone's expendable. And if you're not going to toe the line, at least... not when I say toe the line, I don't mean toe the line. I guess if you're not going to be aware of your surroundings, you're going to get swallowed up and they're going to cut bait. They're going to move on.
No, I agree. I'm 100% with you, Scoot. And the people who are saying, talking bad about WVU for making this decision, you know, I hate to use the trust the climb stuff in all of this, but those are the people who don't trust the climb. Those are the people who aren't backing the program, the university,
right?
What Coach Brown's trying to do, what Shane Lyons is trying to do, what, you know, President Gee's trying to do. And at the end of the day, you know, they're the same people who say, well, all lives matter. Well, nobody's saying that all lives don't matter. You know what I mean? Like, nobody's like, that's right. That's people not understanding what the point is. And I think that's what's frustrating about it.
I just think, you know, you look at Neil Brown and you talk about trusting the climb, right? So the people that think that Vic Koning is the defensive guru to end all defensive gurus and now WVU is screwed because we don't have him, how do they feel about a 5-7 season that they had last year?
Right.
Well, and I don't think it's a value judgment on Coach Vic, and I don't want us to bash Coach Vic either. I just think people are suddenly acting like we're now, you know, a month or two before a season that, sidebar, I don't think is going to happen. And they're worried that we now don't have a coach, you know, for the defense, when we now have an interesting coaching by committee thing going on. But I think it's more, it's still a bad thing. It's, you know, I hate that it happened. Everyone hates that it happened. But I also hate that someone was displaying the kind of behavior that would get them shown the door, like what has happened. So again, I don't think you're going to be shocked if you're in 2020 and you see that kind of stuff. And so, Guido, that's what I had mentioned to you. I saw two themes on Twitter this last week and a half. One of them was, there's a lot of people that are saying, man, 2020 is whack. What is wrong with 2020? And I kept thinking,
are people still using whack?
I am. Can I use? I just kind of threw that in there. I actually didn't see anyone saying whack.
1994? What is this? Johnson still uses
wiggity 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 whack.
But I read a really good thing about Chuck D and the Beastie Boys earlier this week, and it made, so I'm throwing a little bit of 90s whack.
Wiggity wiggity whack.
Yeah. So, and I was thinking the whole time, it's kind of back to what we were just talking about. How in 2020 is this a new thing that you're encountering? So don't blame it on it's not a product of 2020.
This should have been a problem in 2018 or 2015 or 2012.
Right. Like, how was this not a, I mean, if
this should have been a problem in 1953.
Yeah, right. So that was one theme that I don't understand. And then the second theme is there's still a whole camp of people that are on Twitter saying, hey, you can't go on Twitter and start big beef and big controversial events on Twitter. Now, keep in mind, this is usually on tweet three of a 5-part tweet where they are, right, in fact, airing grievances and starting big beef on Twitter. So I find that to be interesting.
That's a great point.
And then lastly, I'll end it with this one, Scoot. So the sub theme, the one that, it didn't gain too much traction because I saw all kinds of people kind of jumping in on what Guido's already kind of explained. But there was a sub kind of discussion of, well, Coach Vic's got a wife and kids. He's got to put food on the table. How's he going to do that? Only making $600,000 over the next 19 months. I was like, come on, guys. Like, come on, I don't want to see the guy lose his job. Sure, I don't either. But, like, let's be practical and realistic here. You guys are just fanning flames to be contrary at that point. Like, come
and he's
on.
Gonna, and don't give me, and like, I don't want to, he's gonna land on his feet.
Sure.
Like, Coach Vic's gonna be fine.
He'll have a soft landing.
He could very well be
another defensive coordinator down the road. He could very well be.
Did this hurt his earning potential in D1 athletics? Absolutely. But he's gonna land on his feet. He'll still be fine. You know, maybe he has to go to an FCS school and not an FBS school. I don't know, but
position coach, right? He'll land, yeah, fine.
It's one of those things where, and we'll leave it at this. It's one of those things where I think that what everybody needs to understand, players, coaches, fans, it's a new world. This is new, and it's only going to continue to head in this direction. We're not going backwards. Things aren't going to go the way they used to be. You know, I'm sorry. They're just not happening.
It sucks. It's what you sign up for. Not intentionally necessarily, but if you are an athlete at a very high level, Division I, if you are a coach at a very high level, Division I, people are going to see and hear what you say and do. That's the bottom line. You know, if this was, I don't know, Bemidji State, in Minnesota, we're not going to know anything about Bemidji State in Minnesota.
I like Bemidji. You just offended everyone that listens to us
in Bemidji. I just, yeah, like saying Bemidji. That's a great,
it is kind of a fun
town.
Word.
So if it happened in Bemidji State, we don't know anything about it. It's because it's a small school. It's Division II or III.
Hopefully Coach Vic learns from this. I think he will land on his feet, and he goes on and he coaches men in a much better way. I think, for me, the point is, in 2020, you cannot be shocked if you're displaying that kind of behavior and you get called out on it. We can debate it until the cows come home, but that's what's going to happen. I'm convinced.
That's the world.
And I'm going to trust Neil Brown, the head coach, has done some investigating. I'm going to assume that he didn't just say, oh, you know, we're going to go with whatever this kid says. He had to have looked into it, because if it was baseless and false,
oh yeah,
then that changes the conversation.
And here's the thing, though. If it was baseless and false, you wouldn't have had half the other defensive players on the team liking and retweeting
it.
So,
right.
how this susses out for West Virginia is this. We found out that it will be a defensive coordinating by committee, Coach Brown said. Jordan Leslie will oversee the front of the defense, and Jameel Dye will now handle the backs. So you see this sort of dual defensive coordinator this season. Jeff Castile comes out of the booth and out of being an analyst and comes in to be an outside linebackers coach now. Dante Wright is now the safeties coach, and Jeff Koons is going to be the inside linebackers coach. So it was a kind of a complete shuffle that they announced this week on the defensive coaching.
And I
side.
Think if maybe COVID didn't exist, maybe Coach Brown really pinpoints somebody to be the defensive coordinator. But at this point, there's really no point in doing that as things are still kind of up in the air.
Yeah. So I think it'll all be fine. And it is what it is. Unfortunately, folks, you've got to understand that this is the world.
I would like to look, it sucks. I hate that it happened, but I would like to finally, like, the administration's made their decision. Neil Brown's made his decision. They're moving forward. I would like to see everyone
rally around the team and rally around the
rally
program.
Around the
move
team
forward. Yeah. Let's rally. Let's cheer for these guys. Let's you know, now let's be optimistic and support them. And like, let's move forward with it. It stunk.
And if you want to be one of those people that's still going to sit there and nitpick, go find another team to follow. Marshall is looking for fans left and right. Go be one. Go down to them. So staying with football, guys, and you know, great positive news. Season. So I guess it came out last week. Things aren't looking too good for the Chick-fil-A kickoff classic.
Does the chicken have COVID?
Well, I don't think the chicken has COVID, but they basically came out and said that if the state of Georgia does not allow fans in the stands for that game, that there will be no games. That they're not gonna put a game on just for nobody. That they need the revenue generated by seats. My question was, and they never really answered this, like, what's the cutoff? Like, what if it's a 20% capacity or a 30% capacity? But it's not looking too good.
That's in Atlanta, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a closed stadium,
right?
So I wonder if that's a factor as well. You know, I don't.
Well, I think it opens up. I think there's like a little iris in the middle that opens up. That, you know.
I never thought about it that way, Scoot. So you're likening it to one big, like, airplane
dome, right? Yeah.
If it's just recirculate the air for 60,000 people.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
If it were an outdoor stadium, I wonder if that is a difference. I don't know. I mean, we see baseballs happening without fans in outdoor stadiums, so I don't know. But I'm just throwing that. Now NASCAR. They had a race with 30,000 fans or at least 20,000 fans, and I've not heard any negative fallout from that.
It's going to be interesting where we go with this. From what I've heard, you know, so far we've only had the Big Ten has done their whole deal that they're only going to play each other. So far, we've only heard from the Big 12 that they are considering a plus one model, which is play all their conference games plus one, whatever that one is. I think would probably be up to the institution. But nothing official has been announced yet. I think the Big 12 is in a weird position because you need to have 10 games, you know, to play. You got to have at least one outside person.
Yeah, and I guess this discussion on the Chick-fil-A game too, Guido, kind of makes me scratch my head because maybe I'm just being naive as usual, but what do you think about if the Chick-fil-A Bowl is going to come back and say, hey, in the Georgia Dome, they're going to come back and say, hey, we're not doing this if we can't have people in the stands. Well, then to me, aren't we proposing that's what we're going to do for the majority of the conference games anyway? You know, if there are fans allowed in, it's some small capacity. So then, to me, I was trying to reconcile their stance versus what I had expected it to be anyway, like maybe games with no fans anyway. So to me, that was really interesting. That
I mean, I think that you've got to expect that if there are games, there are games with no fans. I just don't see how they do it otherwise. And so, you know, what maybe West Virginia keeps one of their non-conference home games that they can keep. It was really interesting. I actually watched the Paul Feinbaum show today, Johnson. And Pat Forty was on it, and he was talking a lot about, you know, what's happening and how there's no consensus in the NCAA, you know, for any of these schools. about what to do, about should we play, should we not play. So you're seeing conferences that are canceling, conferences that are delaying. They're only playing they're only playing conference games. And, you know, he's said that he talked to, you know, one Division I AD, he didn't name who it was, but said that, you know, they're very frightened. Division I sports is very frightened about the economic ramifications if no games are played this year for their institutions.
Yeah, it's scary.
Even just from the, it's scary from the instant, you know, not necessarily for football, because football will survive. Basketball will survive. It's everybody else. It's all of the other sports, you know, that will have a hard time surviving.
Yeah, and I think, so just to give more context, I think since we talked about this on our last live show, you know, we've saved stuff about Syracuse has announced they won't be allowed to have fans at home football games. The Sun Belt delayed to September 3rd. I think earlier today I had read where the, I want to say the MAC, but it's the MAAC. Okay. Also canceled all fall sports, I believe. What's that?
It's the Metro Atlantic.
Is that okay? And then Guido, you pointed out the entire Michigan State football team is now under quarantine.
Yeah. So you have now you have.
So it's like the hits keep coming for all of these.
The hits keep coming. And think of it this way. So August 7th is when D1 schools can start. Most D1 schools can start full contact practices, can start normal practices. So you have that starting August 7th. They get out of the just doing workouts and coaching meeting, and they get into being able to start doing full contact practices August 7th. You add a week to that. Most institutions, a week, week and a half to that, most institutions at that point are allowing kids to come back to campus now. So now you have a town like Morgantown that's going to have an influx of 20,000+ kids coming back onto campus. You're having practices. At that point, you're less than 2 weeks away from playing games in front of people or not in front of people. And I think that's going to be the real place where we're going to find out what happens, because that's when you have 20-year-olds, 19-year-olds coming back onto college campuses, partying, the COVID numbers start to
hit. And kids moving into dorms and, right. You know, a lot of stuff coming together.
College sports, of all the levels of sports, is going to be the toughest to actually start a season, finish a season, play a season. Because, like you just said, when you were 19, 20, 21, 22, in some cases, some of us might have been 23, you weren't worried about who you came in contact with, how close you were. If you were out, you're trying to be loud. You know, you didn't worry about that stuff. And I wasn't going to have somebody tell me what I could and couldn't do, you know, especially if I'm, you know, 21 years old or whatever. So that's where it's going to get real dicey. You can't put the college kids in a bubble. Professional athletes, it's their job. They need to, you know, if they want to continue to make money, they're going to respect the parameters that are set, and they're going to, like, what the NBA and the NHL have had zero positive cases in the bubble.
Yeah, and you've got way more scope for control. I agree with what you're saying.
College, there's too many moving parts.
Right. Ross Dellinger for SI.com wrote an article today that, like, what will college, and we'll talk more about this in segment two, but what will the college world in the NFL learn from the difference of what's happening with Major League Baseball right now and what's happening with the NBA right now. NBA, zero positives. NBA, if you're a player and you go to a strip club, as one unnamed player did, you get automatically bounced. Quarantined 2 weeks. Boom, bounced. You're done. Sit out for 2 weeks, you know? You know, the theory would be, well, why not let these players, these college football players, just take classes with each other and bubble them? But I just don't know how you do that.
Well, here's the thing. Like, you know, they live in dorms, a lot of them. And, it, you know, when you live in a dorm, it's not all athletes in one place. It's all kids from all kinds of backgrounds. So you, as a football player, might be following all the protocols, wearing the mask, washing your hands, hand sanitizer all the time. Let's say you share a restroom on your dorm floor with 15 other guys, and 7 of those or 8 of those guys aren't athletes.
Well, I mean, yeah. You think about Johnson. I don't know. I mean, I had friends at WVU. Think about, like, Bennett Tower. Like, Like, come on. Like,
yeah, I mean, I lived in Borman South, and I had a floor, you know, with like 20 guys and two bathrooms. You know, you shared community bathrooms.
Like, how do
I mean,
you do that?
So that's, you know, that's what I think. If I had a son or daughter moving into a dorm, that just seems like, man, that's a lot going on there.
Yeah, guys, I don't know. It's going to be an interesting couple of weeks. Well, listen, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We're going to skip off the fluff this week, boys, and we're going to talk a little baseball because the three of us are huge baseball people. So when we come back, we'll talk a little Major League Baseball. So don't go anywhere. You're listening to Got Your Ears On.
Vortech Knives is a West Virginia owned and operated company specializing in high quality steel, fast opening, everyday carrying knives. If you go to VortechKnives.com today and use the code GYEO, you get a 25% discount on your entire order. That's Vortech, V-O-R-T-E-K, Knives.com, a West Virginia owned and operated company specializing in fast opening, high quality, everyday carry knives. Vortech Knives.
All right, welcome back to Got Your Ears On, Guido, along with Scoot and Johnson. Don't forget, you can find us online on Twitter, on Instagram, at Got Your Ears. And you can also find us on Facebook and all of those fine places. Just search Got Your Ears On. Boys, exciting news. Baseball's back.
Kind of.
Okay. It is. It's back.
It's back. So for those of you who don't know, Johnson, Scoot, and I, huge baseball fans. We like three different and distinctive teams.
Yeah, one successful and two not so much.
Two not so much. That's especially debatable. This year, maybe. I don't know. My Orioles, they're my Baltimore Orioles.
No, they're off to a hot start.
Chris Davis got his first hit.
Double with a RBI.
And then I think he promptly got out right after that.
He forgot how many outs there were. I saw that. He forgot how many outs there were.
He started to run.
Third and got doubled out.
Yeah, he thought there were two outs.
Are you serious? I didn't see that. Come on.
He thought there were two outs, and he started jogging off and got doubled off.
And this man makes how much money to play like this?
It's some ungodly amount.
Too much.
It's like $156 million for the next 3 years or some ridiculousness.
Johnson, you're an Oakland Athletics fan, which is interesting. Because
nobody knows any names from that team.
Well,
except Matt Olson and Matt Chapman and Chris Davis.
I hope Brown here has a good season.
Come on. Who doesn't love an opening day walk-off grand slam, Guido?
Well, and Goatee, he drove in several runs last game.
I thought it was Monkey Tail Goatee struck a couple guys.
Yeah. And then they always have some sort of Australian guy. And Australian guy came in to close the game out. It's West Coast. Nobody pays attention on the West Coast.
Scoot, on the other hand, is a Pittsburgh Pirates fan, which is nice because, you're from Connecticut, which is New York's frying pan hat, where most people are either Red Sox or Yankee fans.
And I was born and raised a Yankees fan. It's true. But when I moved to West Virginia.
What you're telling me is you have no allegiance, is what you're saying.
And
you're...
I don't understand that, Scoot. Like, why didn't any of that boyhood fandom just transfer to now?
Back what when happened? I moved.
And why would you stop being a Yankees fan and start being a Pirates
thing.
Fan?
Right. It makes no sense.
When I moved here, access was not what you would say formidable. And so if I was to follow my team, much like you do, Mr. Johnson, you have to look at the box scores, and that can only get you so jazzed. I wanted to be able to watch my team. So
you could get the Pirates on the old rabbit ears.
I got the Pirates. I got Pirates 155 games or some ridiculousness. So back when they were really bad, which has kind of come full circle again, but when they were really bad in the early 2000s, I got on board, and you start, when you watch a bunch of games, you start to kind of follow guys and see where, the management plans to take the team and all that kind of stuff. So you kind of
get involved. What you sound like. You remind me of my father, who is still perturbed that he cannot watch the Braves on
TBS. He wants TBS.
TBS, and he can't watch the Cubs on WGN. He was always big Brave. He could always tell me what was going on with the Braves and the Cubs because you could watch them almost every day, and that is kind of silly now. You can't do stuff like that.
Yeah, so that's why I just kind of veered off from the Yankees just because I was tired of looking at box scores. I wanted more.
Well, hopefully now you don't have to veer off completely after, what, 1 week of games, Guido? I mean, hopefully we survive what has now become an outbreak in the Marlins organization.
Yeah, so today things got really crazy with baseball as the Monday and Tuesday games, Baltimore versus the Marlins, have been canceled due to the Marlins having a COVID outbreak. What is it, like?
It's 11.
Eight, nine 11, players.
11 people in the traveling party.
Yeah, and a couple coaches. So, you know, the question becomes is, like, is this sustainable? And I saw the interview on MLB Network with Rob Manfred, and he doesn't look that great. He's not looking too good right now. I think he feels ill and worried and concerned that they should have made the decision to play in a bubble, which they didn't. And you look at the NBA and the NHL, who are pretty much bubbling it up, and it's not going too well for Major League Baseball.
Well, Scoot is—I feel like Scoot's way more in tune on this than me. But from what I understand, the solution is then taxi squads and, you know, like replacement players, larger lineups. But is that really how this is going to go? Because aren't you just then assuming that all of those people are fine showing up and playing?
Manfred even said today that they wouldn't even take off the table, that maybe one team would just be out. Like, maybe the Marlins are out. They're done.
Wow,
and they just reworked the schedule.
I hadn't heard that. Wow.
So that's, I mean, I don't know. It's and it's unfortunate for the Marlins, who hit really well. I think the part that kind of is a head scratcher to me is that, so I guess what happened was, is that the Marlins had one player test positive on Saturday. Well, that test on Friday, they got the test results back on Saturday. One player, they're in Philadelphia, one player tested positive. Then they tested again on Saturday. Three players came back on Sunday testing positive. And Major League Baseball left it up to the Marlins to decide if they were going to play or not play on Sunday.
Do what now?
And the Marlins front office decided to play, that it was not an outbreak, that it was just an anomaly, and then tested again on Sunday before the game, late. So I guess what I've read today was that they're testing in the mornings when the players get to the park, and then those results, the way they have it set up, is those results are coming back at like 9 or 10 o'clock at night, which is why this all kind of broke overnight.
Can I ask another question just now that you're explaining it that way? Like, so yeah. Scoot, are these like the 2-foot-long swab up the nose tests?
I don't think
time?
So. I think this is the, the Q-tip, and it goes 3 times around one of your strills. You whip it around 3 times, and then it's a faster, non-invasive.
And then what they're saying is, and the challenge of it all is that, so sometimes you may, so let's say you're a Phillies player and the Marlins first baseman had it, and you came in contact with him.
Yeah, and they just funked up your whole, just got your whole facility funky there.
And on top of that, yeah, they got you all funky. They got you. On top of that, the other problem is that sometimes it takes a few days for the virus to inoculate you. So like sometimes you may take a test on Monday and it come back negative, and then you take it on Tuesday, but you've already played a game where you were actually positive.
Right.
So it's a cluster.
I actually, Guido, had read or heard on, I believe I heard it on MLB Radio, I think is where the source was. They actually didn't let it up. Like, it wasn't left up to Marlins management whether or not they should play yesterday. It was up to the players. So you're
that's even worse.
You're a 25-year-old guy who doesn't have any symptoms. What are you going to do?
This is really how they're doing it.
Fine, let's play a game.
Come on. Like,
so the big problem baseball has is
that it's baseball.
It's too open, right? So they're going back to their apartments. They're going to hotels. They're flying in planes together.
They're not in a bubble.
Right. Guys are going to get their morning coffee from the Starbucks. I mean, there's too much gray area where they could come in contact with somebody else outside of team personnel. And, you know, it doesn't take, I think we've learned that it doesn't take much to spread this disease, or I don't even know if it's a disease, this virus. So it doesn't take much to spread this virus. And, you know, maybe I had a valet park my car. I don't know why I would do that, but maybe I had a valet park my car and somehow I came in contact with that guy. And, you know, it's just crazy
stuff.
Well,
and the reality is that these players, when they're in the hotel, they are strongly asked not to go out, but they're not, this isn't a lockdown situation for Major League Baseball. These players aren't locked in their rooms. This isn't a bubble situation. Like, you could have one player who decides he wants to go out and grab something to eat.
I can tell you right now, if the Marlins are looking for a guy that's going to lock himself down in a bubble, I could pick it at third.
I'm the guy.
I could pick it back in the day. I
mean, I don't think I could catch a game anymore, but I could probably play a little right field.
I don't know. I mean, I think I'll put the bat on the ball. It will be not on purpose. It'll be more of me ducking away because I'm scared of getting hit by something fast.
Close your eyes and swing.
Please, dear God, don't let the ball hit me. But I will put the bat on the ball. You know, some people might say, well, why wouldn't you just bunt? If you're not going to be a big-time hitter, just bunt. I'm scared to square up. I don't want to see the ball coming at me like that.
Yeah, I'm not squaring up on 90-something
You know, you think, let's take like I know he's got COVID right now, but Aroldis Chapman. I'm a Miami Marlin. I'm gonna have to face Aroldis Chapman at some point. I don't want that. I would look like John Kruk facing Randy Johnson. The ball, like, I don't even know if the ball would leave his hand. He could throw a pitch like Anthony Fauci, and I would swing at it because I would be scared to death that it was going to hit me.
So here's the thing. This is where it really got to today with baseball, which is probably one of the bigger names pitcher in Major League Baseball, David Price, basically comes out on Twitter and says, "See, boys, this is why I'm not playing." Do you think, Scoot, that we're going to see more players opt out over the next week or two? Because the rule is, the agreement is that they can opt out at any point.
But then they're done,
the
right? Is that? But I think
but
they
then
can
they're done.
Back.
Once you opt out, you're out. Yeah. Once.
Well, selfishly, I worry about guys that were on the fence before, right? So like Mike Trout, whose wife is pregnant, and right. There was a lot of talk that he might opt out, but while they were doing the summer camp 2.0 or spring training 2.0.
And who is on your fantasy baseball team?
Yes, so I'm a little concerned because he did have a home run yesterday. We need him to continue to hit. But I worry that those are the types of guys that the ones that were, you know, doubting if they've got pregnant wives or they've got somebody in their close. I mean, you know, let's say you're a single guy, but you're real close with your parents and one of your parents is immunocompromised and you want to see them at some point in the relatively near future, since you're not in a bubble, maybe those are the guys that kind of opt out. The idea, though, of having Johnson, to go back to your taxi squad conversation, in theory, the idea was Major League Baseball teams are going to have 60 guys at their disposal. So when somebody comes ill or contracts the coronavirus, they bring somebody from a very close alternate site, and these are guys typically that are pretty close to major league ready, or sometimes were major leaguers, just didn't fit on their 30-man roster. So then they would come up and fill those guys' spaces. But when you have like eight players, I don't think the Major League Baseball was prepared for eight guys at a time to be down, especially all at like in one day or 2 days.
Do you think, Johnson, that the NFL, or I mean more so the NFL than college, I think college sports, college athletics is such a different beast with classes and all the other things that go and are involved with it. Do you think the NFL, who has more players on a team, more personnel on a team than your average MLB, do you think this changes their perspective at all?
To me, I would think it would reaffirm the people that want to try to put everyone in a bubble and lock everybody down and have a ton of standards and strict rules. And I think it would make me, like, just question, can the NFL do that? And it would make me feel more like, here is the hurdle and the obstacle that NCAA football is going to have to overcome.
Like, here's the problem with football. Basketball is doable because it's, I don't want to say easy, but it's easy to have multiple courts.
No, but it's limited rosters. It's indoor. You can kind of cordon stuff off.
Right. You're talking 15 players at most per team.
Right.
Football, right. You're probably going to have to carry a minimum of 53. I think 53 is a typical roster.
Yeah, 53-man roster.
So you're going to have to carry that many, plus your 15 to 20 coaches slash trainer slash that staff. So you're still looking at 75 to 90 people.
So is it even feasible to think you're going to bubble, every...
How do you put that many people in one space?
I agree.
And where is that space? Like,
where is that?
Like a military base? Could you do it at a military base? But then where do you put the military guys? I guess guys and women.
I don't know how they do that. I mean, I think that you've seen the success with the NBA and how well that's going for the NBA. And I mean, for the TBT, even though there were teams that backed out, it worked for the TBT. They bubbled all their players. There was not a problem in the TBT. The NBA is doing great. They have zero positives. They're kicking people out if they leave the facility. And I agree. I don't know how you do it with the NFL. I don't know how Major League Baseball would have done it. But
now
I don't see how this succeeds.
There is one positive in all of this.
Okay.
So, Johnson, are you listening carefully?
Yeah.
The positive is because the Miami Marlins will now have to, if they continue their season, will now have to bring on some of these minor league type players.
Right.
The Miami Marlins will now take the place as the most anonymous team over your Oakland Athletics.
Oh, okay. Yes.
So
sure.
The Athletics will now drop to the number two spot as far as anonymous players, and the Marlins will take the center.
But Guido, I told Scoot, can you imagine you're in Dade County somewhere just throwing catch in the front yard trying to kill time during this lockdown, and then a Marlins logoed SUV pulls up and says, hey kid, you want to sign a contract to play third? That kind
of
stuff.
Do they hit
stuff.
You with the Q-tip right away?
Yeah, right up the nose.
They get you with the swab.
I thought it was interesting today to hear Paul. I don't know why I call him Paul. Rob Manfred talk about.
He looks like a Paul.
He kind of looks like a Paul. Maybe that's what it is. Talk about how, he could see a scenario where one team would just go away. Like, okay, there's no more Marlins this year. And that's kind of odd to think about.
It would be weird because it would give people, instead of a one-day break, you might have a three-day break or a two-day break, or I don't know what they would do.
Well, how does it work for a team like Baltimore, who did have a nice series against the Red Sox, even though the first game was terrible, a nice series against the Red Sox, come in and hot into Miami.
This is ruining their mojo.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Well, and we can't, for practical purposes, you can't expect the Marlins to be the last team where this happens. So does baseball start to become a survival of the fittest? We got five teams left in the National and eight in the American.
Who gets voted off the island?
Yeah, right. What do you start doing?
Is there any truth to the rumor, Guido, that you have started a change.org petition to count these games as forfeit wins for the Orioles to count toward the standings?
Well, I have not. I should start that. I have not, but they have said that it may end up that way. Because it's such a small amount of time that we're trying to fit games in.
I've also heard,
what if the Orioles just lucked out and before each of their series, that team was the one that had the outbreak
and
they just had a 2/3 of their wins were forfeit wins.
It'd be phenomenal. The other thing we haven't talked about, guys, is with Major League Baseball, is how about the Toronto Blue Jays, where Canada won't let Toronto play in Toronto, where Canada won't let other teams come to Toronto, I should say. So the Blue Jays were homeless for a good part of last week. Almost went to the Pittsburgh, played in Pittsburgh, almost went to Baltimore, played in Baltimore. But now they're going to play the first 2 weeks of their season as away games are in the other team's stadium, even though they get to have them as home games. So when they play the Nationals, they're going to play the two home games, and then they play the two away games where they have to be the away team and two where they're the home team. But then they're going to go play in a AAA stadium in Buffalo, which I guess is getting new lighting right now as we speak.
It's weird. It's very weird.
It's crazy. This is insane.
Yeah, I don't know. I was kind of hoping for the Blue Jays to play in Pittsburgh because there were some pretty cool logo ideas for the Pittsburgh Jays.
I saw them.
Even the Baltimore Jays had a couple of cool logos. But yeah. I did, again, back to your Orioles, I read through some of that collective bargaining agreement, and if there are forfeit wins, they have bargained in, the Orioles have bargained in that there would be a box score printed and posted. Chris Davis would be credited with going 2-for-3 with a home run and 2 RBIs for every forfeited game in order to justify paying him what they pay him.
I thought you were going to say Chris Davis was going to go 0-for-4 with 4 strikeouts in each game. How about our bet, Scoot? Scoot and I have a little side bet in 60 games that the Orioles can't win 20.
I could get ripped off here. If they start giving them...
You might get ripped off.
Because of all these...
You might get ripped off in this
one. Oh, that would be horrible.
All right, guys. Well, listen, let's take a little break, and we'll come back, and we'll do everybody's favorite segment about nothing, a segment we like to call, I Can't Believe My Ears. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on Got Your Ears On.
Tactical Legion Knives, a West Virginia-owned and operated company that specializes in heavy-duty tactical knives and gear for the professional warrior, the weekend warrior, and the outdoor warrior. Our products are built tough. For who? For warriors. Hey, Mountaineer fans, make sure you go on Amazon and search Tactical Legion Knives, and when you do, make sure you put in the promo code 25TOBRADIO for Tob Radio. You'll get 25% off on Tactical Legion Knives.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Got Your Ears On, Guido, along with Scoot and Johnson. Don't forget, check out our website. It's a great place to find out things about us, see what the show is about. You get all the links, all the notes, right, Johnson, to the show every week. So check it out.
Right. So everything we talk about, we try to go ahead and link to that in a rundown in the show notes that are on the blog post. And then also right on the show page, you can listen to the latest episode. So check it out.
Yeah, definitely check it out. GotYourEarsOn.com. That's GotYourEarsOn.com. Well, guys, it's time for the segment that everybody knows and loves. It's time for Can't Believe My Ears. What do you got, Sue?
As you know, and maybe our listeners know, I like to eat.
Right.
And I like meatball sandwiches. That's okay. I love a good meatball. Where I'm from.
You love it when there is a balance of meat and ball.
Where I'm from, we call it a meatball grinder, which around here makes me look weird, so I don't say that. Around here,
it's called meatball hoagie sub. Around there,
would you say grinder?
Meatball sub.
I would meatball grinder.
Grinder. Do you like cheese on your balls?
Of course, always.
Yeah, I figured. Yeah,
I figured.
Always cheese on the balls.
Okay.
This story comes out of the University of Georgia. A student. Now, as you know, with coronavirus going on, students are going remote. Right. So, there's a lot more computer screen time. And there was a student named Sam Lee. She's 20 years old. She goes to the University of Georgia.
I'm assuming Sam is short for Samantha.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
What? Of course. What else would it be? Her name's Salmonella Lee or something?
No, that's a good question.
What else would it be, Guido?
I don't know. What else could it be?
I don't know. You've stumped me.
Okay. Sorry, Scoot.
Okay. She's taking an exam, Samantha. Economics exam, which to me would be very boring. I had to take economics in college. I didn't really enjoy it. In your wheelhouse, Johnson, you like economics.
Because you're...
So she's taking this exam, okay? All the while, now I question this, but all the while enjoying a meatball sub.
Okay, so just right...
I mean, let's first talk about... How many times in our college careers would we have loved to eat a meatball sub while taking an exam?
I would love, yes.
I'll give you that. I'll give you that.
So she's knocking down a tasty sandwich.
Okay.
Okay. Taking an exam.
And historically, a meatball sub is a messy sandwich.
It's a messy.
She had a problem.
So you've got a devil may care attitude to, like, you know, just concentrating on your test trying to eat this sub.
She had a problem. When, she was snacking on the sub.
Yeah.
A ball sprung loose.
Okay. This is, oh man. Okay.
And submitted her exam halfway through.
So you're saying balls on the enter key?
Yes, she her balls dropped onto the enter key.
Oh my god!
She got a 37.17 on the exam.
Really? That is
so. Now can she appeal?
So like... she writes an email to the professor. Okay, because she's upset. She had had good grades, so she writes an email to the professor. And she says, you know, I had a situation. It says, dear professor, I guess this guy's name is Lestrops. Sounds very French.
He doesn't sound, Professor Lestrops does not sound like a man who's going to be amenable to wiggle room so, for a meatball ball hitting.
Economics, come on. Those guys are dry.
Yeah, come on.
So she says in this email, I had some technical difficulties and outside distractions during the test today. Something hit my computer and caused it to submit the test when I had less than half of the questions answered.
Okay.
By something, I mean a meatball that tragically had tragically fallen onto my keyboard as I was taking the exam.
Tragically.
This said meatball caused some malfunctions.
Can you imagine if this was being videoed and like it was one of those like, and then you slow-mo see the meatball just careening toward the no.
So she says that the said meatball caused some malfunctions with my laptop and caused its test to submit itself. While I have yet to comprehend how this sequence of events even occurred, I have provided you some primary evidence of the event occurring. So she had taken a picture and included that in the email of, you know, the damage left from the ball on the keys.
Okay.
So as she said that, I know,
well,
you...
Scoot, I'm on the edge of my seat. Like, let's okay. get like, did,
so
Lestrange was he
writes
like...
back.
Okay.
And he says, Samantha, well, this certainly is certainly a new and unusual excuse for a low score, but for that reason it seems unlikely you've made this up. I've extended your deadline for the module 6 test until midnight.
Good man
tonight.
good man
Lestrops.
You should be able to go
good,
back
good
and
on you Lestrops.
I mean,
and then he says, he finishes, and I would recommend you take the test either before or after dinner.
Yeah, come on. Sans meatball sub.
Sans meatball, like, sub.
I would love to eat a meatball sandwich. You know what? I'd love to eat a meatball sandwich right now.
Yeah,
if
right.
I could. They're delicious.
Well, I would. On this particular Zoom call, you're more than welcome to eat a meatball sub anytime you like.
I worry that it'll do something to my microphone or something.
I worry that. So let's take this back and like let's say you're on a you're on a work Zoom call. Are you going to eat while you're on a work Zoom call, Scoot?
I think no.
Okay.
I think no. I think you run too many risks of mess, mouth open while chewing, you know, a potential burp. I mean, it just leads to bad things.
Do you think you would crunch ice while doing a podcast on a Zoom call?
Well, that has definitely happened.
I don't know.
Trick question.
Definitely.
Trick question.
The last
zing,
trick question.
The last
happened.
Time you did that, Johnson, it was very offensive.
So, but in Sam's defense, or Samantha, Lord,
Samuel, I don't know, what else.
Or Salmonella, if that's what works for her. This wasn't like an actual class. This was, she was taking a test. So this is like you, Scoot, like doing your TPS reports and eating a meatball hoagie while
filing your taxes, and you hit the wrong button. A ball hits the wrong button. You file single and independent as opposed to joint and married or something. And all of a sudden you're getting an IRS audit because you screwed up.
Man. You got to start collecting a receipt.
That would be.
Do you have the receipt for the meatball sub, sir? That's what I want to know.
So I just thought that was a good story.
That's a good one. One last WVU thing, guys, and then we'll go. We didn't really talk about basketball any this week, but Eric Martin is extremely excited about WVU basketball this season. It was very nice to see him tweet out how excited he was about the start of workouts and all of that other stuff. Unfortunately, I think the bad part of it is I'm not sure he's even got a chance to play a season. This is going to be our topic for next week's show, so definitely tune in. We're going to talk about WVU basketball, about how Dick Vitale and everybody is picking WVU as one of, if not the best, is one of the best teams in the Big 12. And in typical WVU fashion, as fans,
may not happen.
We may not even get a season. Yeah. That would totally be a WVU.
Yeah, game, that would 100%. Totally be our luck. Yes. Hopefully that's not the case, but yeah.
So tune in next time. We'll talk WVU basketball, amongst other things, guys. Thanks for listening this week. We'll be back soon with another show. Don't forget, find us on Instagram and Twitter at Got Your Ears. You can also find us on Facebook, Got Your Ears On. And don't forget, check out the webpage. It's kind of the hub for everything. You can find everything we talked about on there. That's GotYourEarsOn.com. Boys, have a good week. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been Got Your Ears On.